भगवते वासुदेवाय
duties for mankind. Chapter 1, the history of the life of Ajahnil, text number 9. Sri Raja Vacha,
Sri Raja Vacha,
Drishta Sutta Yam Yat Papam,
Drishta Sutta Yam Yat Papam,
Jananapya Manohitam,
Jananapya Manohitam,
Karoti Bhuyo
Vivasaha,
save one from sinful acts. In the following verse, He further explains his rejection of this process. Okay, I think we'll move on.
Yeah.
It's a story more than anything. Kvacit nivartate bhadrat. Kvacit charajitat punaha. Prayaschitamato partam. Manye kunja sotavat. Sometimes one who is very alert, so as not to commit sinful activities, is victimized by sinful life again. I therefore consider this process of repeated sinning and atonement to be useless. It is like the bathing of an elephant. For an elephant cleanses itself by taking a full bath, but then throws dust over its head and body as soon as it returns to the land. Purport. When Pariksit Maharaj inquired how a human being could free himself from sinful activities so as not to be forced to go to hell's planetary systems after death, Sukadeva Goswami answered that the process of counteracting sinful life is atonement. In this way, Sukadeva Goswami tested the intelligence of Maharaj Pariksit, who passed the examination by refusing to accept this process as genuine. Now Pariksit Maharaj is expecting another answer from his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami. Text 11, Sri Madhavaya Nirvata Kamana Karman Hirahao Nahiyatyantikas Ishyate Avidvat Adhikaritvat Payas Chittam Vimarshanam. Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vedavyas, answered, "My dear king, since acts meant to neutralize impious actions are also fruitive, they will not release one from the tendency to act fruitively. Persons who subject themselves to the rules and regulations of atonement are not at all intelligent. Indeed, they are in the mode of darkness. Unless one is freed from the mode of ignorance, trying to counteract one action through another is useless because this will not uproot one's desires. Thus, even though one may superficially seem pious, he will undoubtedly be prone to act impiously. Therefore, real atonement is enlightenment in perfect knowledge, Vedanta, by which one understands the Supreme Absolute Truth." Purport. The Guru, Sukadeva Goswami, has examined Pariksit Maharaj, and it appears that the king has passed one phase of the examination by rejecting the process of atonement because it involves fruitive activities. Now, Sukadeva Goswami is suggesting the platform of speculative knowledge. Progressing from Karma Kanda to Jnana Kanda, he is proposing Prayaschittam Vimarshanam. Real atonement is full knowledge. Vimarshanam refers to the correlation of speculative knowledge. In Bhagavad Gita, Karmis who are lacking in knowledge are compared to asses. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 15, Narmam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradama mayaya paritijana asuram bhavam astritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons do not surrender unto me. Thus, Karmis who engage in simple acts and who do not know the true objective of life are called mudhas, asses. Vimarsana, however, is also explained in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text 15, where Krishna says, Vidyascha sarvaya aham eva vidyaha. The purpose of Vedic study is to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One studies Vedanta, but merely advances somewhat in speculative knowledge and does not understand the Supreme Lord, one remains the same mudha. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 19, One attains real knowledge when he understands Krishna and surrenders unto him. Bahunam, Janmanam, Ante, Gyanam, Mam, Rupajite. To become learned and free from material contamination, therefore one should try to understand Krishna. For thus, one is immediately liberated from all pious and impious activities and their reactions.
Om Agyanati Nirandasya Gnanjana Sadakaya Chakshurumitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Pishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayarupa Kadamahyam Dhratisvapadam Tikam Mukam Karoti Vatsalam So,
Maharaj Parikshit has passed the test in that he's rejecting the process of atonement because it's not effective. So he's offering an alternative, the cultivation of knowledge. But the cultivation of knowledge describes how those engaging in the fruitive activities of Kamakanda, which we described earlier on, what the Prabhupada was saying, 18 types of Dharma Shastra, which is pious activities. It's quite elevated. It's following the prescriptions of the Vedas, but the Kamakanda section of the Vedas. But here, Maharaj Parikshit says that this is Avidvat. Avidvat. So, Vidvan is somebody who has knowledge, but Avidvan or Avidvat means ignorance. So even though this is the following of the Vedic guidelines for purification to reactions to simple activities is quite pious, but ineffective because the motivations for performing simple activities are not purified. And so, even this more elevated stage of understanding and of practice, as is recommended in the Vedas, is still described here, interestingly, as ignorance. Right? Because it doesn't really, it may free us from the reactions of our sinful activities, but it doesn't stop the sinful activities themselves. So how to do that? So next stage is to come to the point of jnana or knowledge as well. Yeah, knowledge. Freedom from this ignorance that the performance of a material activity effectively will counteract the reactions of another. Material activity is not effective, not practical. And so it's mentioned here, one needs to develop knowledge. This will bring us to the point of real atonement, where one can be freed from these material desires. Prayaschittam vimarshanam. Full knowledge of Vedanta is described here. Now, in the purport, what does Srila Prabhupada say? Real atonement is full knowledge. This is what Sukadeva Goswami is recommending. Progressing from karma kanda to jnana kanda. He is proposing prayaschittam vimarshanam. Real atonement is full knowledge. But Prabhupada says here, vimarshanam refers to the cultivation of speculative knowledge. In the translation, it's given as full knowledge of Vedanta. But Prabhupada clarifies it more specifically. Speculative knowledge, although it may be based on Vedic principles. Prabhupada says, in the Bhagavad Gita, karmis were lacking in knowledge compared to asses. Namam duṣkṛti no mūḍha. Prapajyante narādamaḥ. Mayaya parita jñāna asuram bhavam asritaḥ. So he, Prabhupada, is describing here the foolish people, the asses, mudha. An ass is often used as an example of a foolish man who works hard day and night to be given some straw by his master, some meager food. Whereas, you know, the grass, Prabhupada explains, the grass is everywhere, growing on the side of the road. He has to be anywhere, but still he has to serve his master and be beaten, carry heavy loads. And he's given a small amount of a small pittance for his work, right? And then when he goes to the she ass for some enjoyment, she kicks him in the face. And the book Winnie the Pooh? You may not. Yeah, Winnie the Pooh. So Winnie the Pooh's friend is called Eeyore. Right? Eeyore. And I always wonder, why is he called Eeyore? Right? Until, again in India, the truth of the animal analogies came close to home. And I saw the donkey getting kicked. And he goes, Eeyore! And snorts and carries on. So then I realised, now I don't know why it's called Eeyore. That's the noise he makes. True knowledge means vimarsana means, Prabhupada clarifies, vimarsana means vidaischa savairaham eva vidyaha. The real purpose of the Vedas is to know the end of Vedanta. Vedanta kriti veda vidya eva charham. The purpose of studying the Vedanta is to come to the understanding that Krishna is the goal. Krishna is the end of all knowledge, Vedanta. Veda vidya eva charham. To know me, Krishna says, that's the whole purpose of studying the Vedas. And Prabhupada makes a point here, if one studies Vedanta, but merely advances somewhat in speculative knowledge, and does not understand the Supreme Lord, one remains the same Buddha. One can study the Vedas but not come to the conclusion of the Vedas, and so therefore remain in ignorance and not surrender. And so Prabhupada mentions here, Bahunam Janmanam Ante, after many, many births, Gyananam Prapadyante, after many, many births, one comes to this realization that Krishna is the source of everything. Vasudeva Sarvameti Sa Mahatma Sudhula Baha. But such a Mahatma is very rare. We see that amongst, I mentioned this the other day, we see that even amongst the devotees who come to Krishna consciousness and surrender for some time, but then relax and go, because they've come to this full realization. It's somewhat speculative or not fully understood. But Prabhupada says here that when one attains real knowledge, when he understands Krishna and surrenders unto him, and of course this is the end, I guess, of the final stage of the nine processes of devotional service, right? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Atmanivedanam. So, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving. Well, Archanam is daily worship, effectively, but serving. And then Padasevanam, rendering service to the lotus feet of the Lord. Vandanam, offering prayers, Atmanivedanam, fully surrendering. These are the nine items of devotional service. So one has to continuously surrender to Krishna. Otherwise, if the devotional service is mixed, if it's mixed with karma, desires for material profit, or if it's mixed with desires for speculative knowledge, then it's not pure. And pure devotional service has to be achieved or arrived at in order to arrive at this stage of full purification, which is being, will be described here by. But of course, this is very interesting, because the story of Ajahnil shows us that even a small amount of devotional service, even if it's not fully pure, is effective. So we shouldn't give this up, it does work. When we find that we're not fully purified, of course this is a stage of anatomy. And of course the stage of understanding the process of bhakti. So our cultivation of knowledge is not so much developing a full understanding of all the relating principles and all of the literature found, all of the Dharma Shastra certainly. But we study the Bhakti Shastra, that which focuses on pure devotional service, or whose ultimate goal is pure devotional service. So our cultivation of knowledge as bhaktas, as devotees, as vidvan, right, those who are learned, is to cultivate an understanding of our relationships with Krishna, sambandha, the relationships between the chit and achit shaktis of the material creation and the relationship with the Lord. Ishvaraha Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Savakarma Karama. Everything comes from Krishna. And should be used in Krishna's service. We are servants. Knowledge of our relationship with Krishna means we should understand that we are not this body. And so the question, right, if we're not this body, what are we? And we should know, we're servants. And so part of our cultivation of knowledge is to understand this relationship, but then know how to act in that relationship. And so that's what the Bhakti Shastra, if you like, teaches. Bhagavad Gita teaches. Srimad Bhagavatam teaches. You know, there's that story of Satsrup Maharaj, then Satsrup Das, who had got a copy of the Narada Bhakti Sutras. He was reading them and he showed them to Prabhupada and showed some appreciation for them. And he asked Prabhupada if he could translate them, and Prabhupada said he would. And he did. A number of verses. Eventually the book was finished off by Satsrupa Goswami. But Satsrupa Maharaj explains that Prabhupada had stopped, and then Prabhupada explained that the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam teach the same things. And so therefore, and that's what he was concentrating on. So effectively, you know, he would complete the work of translating the Narada Bhakti Sutras by teaching the Bhagavad Gita and teaching the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so there's that knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, but then there's the knowledge of Abhideya, or practice, which is, you know, why we study, if you like, to cement our understanding of our relationship with Krishna as a servant, and be purified then of these tendencies for material enjoyment or material accumulation of wealth, of learning, of influence, our power, our fame, whatever. And just being a servant, a very humble servant. Is that easy? Being a humble servant? No. It's easy being a puffed up servant. You start thinking, yes, I'm very qualified. I'm a very qualified servant. Then you discover, no, I'm not. So, study is important. And that's why Prabhupada gave us so much literature. And that the relationship of a servant to the master in devotional service is very nuanced. It's very subtle. It's not subtle. It's purely spiritual, which sometimes can be lost to us in our, you know, haze of ignorance of material existence. And so Prabhupada says here, Bhavanam Jagannamante, many, many births. It takes a person. Gyanavanam, one who's learned, surrenders unto me. Gyanavanam Prabhupada. Amongst many thousands, amongst many, Sa Mahatma Sadhuru Maha, such a rare person. And we see that rarities. Even amongst the devotees, we see that many chant Hare Krishna, read Bhagavad Gita, but then over time they stop. And then they stop serving. Right? Or they struggle. And so at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says he can become learned. Vidvad, or Vidvana, as opposed to Avidvad. And to cultivate this Adhika, right? It's mentioned here, Avidvad, Adhika, Vidvad. Having the adhika, the ability, right? The ability to surrender, to come to this point of surrender, requires for the devotees an understanding of the process of bhakti. Understanding the process of chanting, because there's our real, well, studying is purifying and chanting Hare Krishna without offense. Perfecting the chanting Hare Krishna, because that's where the purification of heart comes from. And it's a tireless effort, you know, sometimes we're cleansing the heart and it just seems like a lump of coal, right? Just full of material inclinations. We've been in a material world for longer than we can imagine. Well, we can only imagine this lifetime, effectively. It's hard for us to think of a previous lifetime. And even if we do grasp that concept, you know, to really understand that, we it's very difficult to face or to appreciate. So, an understanding of our relationship, but then an understanding of the practice of bhakti, what it really means. And that's a proper understanding of how to chant Hare Krishna. Clearly, removing offences, just hearing the sound of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's a big challenge. Learn how to chant Hare Krishna. We need to study it. So that Masnapanam Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Nam Nam Makari Bhagavata. Nijasava Shaktis. All potencies are contained in the chanting of Hare Krishna. All of Krishna's personal shakti or potency is in the holy name. And as Arjuna Maharaj mentioned us yesterday, he was in the initiation ceremony, he was saying, you only have to chant one name of Krishna and you can eradicate more reactions to sinful activities than you can perform. That's pretty far out. But still, the material motivations come. So we need to chant a lot. We need to keep chanting. We need to learn how to chant for that ultimate purification. And of course, when we achieve that stage, then how do we feel? How do you feel when you've chanted 16 attentive, focused rounds of the Mahamantra. How do you feel?
Like
you're
floating.
Huh?
Like you're floating.
Like it's working.
Floating. Yeah. Floating.
Huh? How do you feel?
Like you're floating, you said floating.
Yeah, but how do you feel?
Euphoric, I think.
Euphoric. Yeah, euphoric. I remember when I the first morning program that I experienced, actually it might not have been the first. Well, I think it was. There's a couple of experiences that I had. The first time I went to the temple and I really was, I don't think I've ever been able to do it successfully ever again, was to hear the Mahamantra, and I thought, wow, this is what they mean. It's real. I was really enthused. Because, you know, I heard the devotees preaching, and I told them how good stuff, but then I heard it. Sometimes, and you know, Prabhupada mentions how Lord Chaitanya sometimes he gives away his wares freely, you know, just like a businessman gives a taste of, you know, the market, they give you a taste of the cheese that they're selling or whatever, or other things that are unmentionable. So sometimes Krishna enthuses us by giving us a taste. Now we realize, whoa, wow, that's right. Now I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. So we need to become an expert in making ourselves qualified to get that be attentive in our chanting effectively. That's the good. You know, when we chant the 10 offences at the end, what do we say? Yes.
Is that working?
Yeah. It's also an offence to be inattentive while chanting. Is it working? That's a good question. Yeah, it's working. It's working. Perhaps not now. So, you know, although it's also related to the 10th offence, right? To not have faith, not to have complete faith in the chanting of Hare Krishna because of maintaining material attachments, but also, you know, just being influenced too much by ignorance and not paying attention, being too tired, for example, is a good one. So learning, and this is why the association of the learners is important, and why we study the Vedas, if you like. What is it? Vidais cha sabaraham eva vidya vidanta kriya veya vid eva jaha. Is to know our relationship with Krishna, but then how to act, abhideya. And this is why we study and need to continuously study the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and, you know, the basic books that Prabhupada's given us, Nectar of Devotion and Chaitanya Charitamrita, these are the four pillars of our, this is our Bhakti Shastra. Yeah, so Prabhupada says he can become learned and free from material contamination. So becoming learned means purified of these tendencies for karma and jnana. And of course that's the definition from Rupa Goswami. Anyabi lashita shunyam. Jnana kamajana vritam. Anukulena krishnano shirana bhakti uchite uttamak bhakti. So, Prabhupada says, therefore, so here's our main point here. One should try to understand Krishna. For thus one is immediately liberated from all pious and impious activities and their reactions. So here, the cultivation of knowledge, not just an understanding of the Vedas, but an understanding of the purpose of the Vedas. This is important. Otherwise one might think, yes, performance of these type of sacrifices, or performance of these kind of austerities, or drilling the breath, you know, performing asanas and all of that to learn to control the breath, to control the mind, and then controlling the mind, understand that you're not the body, you're spiritual by nature, and this is the beginning. But there's more than that. Going beyond understanding you're not the body, you're not the mind, you're not the intelligence, you're pure spirit soul. And as a pure spirit soul, Krishna does, or does he, understand one's identity. That's the real purpose of studying the Vedas. Not just coming to the point of understanding that you're spiritual by nature, because then you may be stuck at that level and not then understand your personal identity, your spiritual identity. Just understand, oh, I'm not the body, I'm spiritual. Well, that's good, but one needs to go beyond that even, to the point of, well, if you're spiritual, then who are you? Spiritual is not enough. So therefore, study of the Bhakti Shastra is required. And so therefore, you know, one understands the process. Of course, the beginning of the process is surrendering to the spiritual master, as we discussed the other day. So, one devotees especially need to be consistent and determined, undeviated. And the way to do that is to cultivate knowledge. And really we do that by studying Prabhupada's books. So that we can distinguish what the Bhagavatam says, reality from illusion. Right at the beginning of the Bhagavatam. The purpose of the Bhagavatam is to distinguish reality from illusion. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then one will attain a real knowledge and surrender, what surrender really means. Atmanivedana, something that goes on all of the time. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Even if they chant like Jehovah or Allah, and I was wondering if those neighbors still had a problem as Krishna and Rama and Hari, or can they can still have the same purifying effect?
There are, it's described in the Harinam Chintamani, how there are varieties of names of the Lord, and how they're all potent. They're all potent. They all have potency. The names of the personal names, if you like. So you know, the Lord can be known as the Ishvara, right? Or the Parama Ishvara, the Supreme Controller. So, you know, that's like God in the office, Lord Narayan. And he's worshipped with awe and reverence, right? And usually he's the God that everybody goes to and says, oh, my dear Lord, please, you know, give me this, give me that, give me another thing. Right? And so, praying to Lord Vishnu in that mood of awe and reverence is beneficial, obviously, and purifying. But the names that have the most potency or the most power for purification are those personal names that describe the Lord in his original form. Right? I haven't read the Harinam Chintamani for quite some time, so I've forgotten the logic that's used by Haridasa Thakur. Actually, Harinam Chintamani is written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But it's a conversation between Haridas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? So, Hare Krishna and Rama are very intimate and personal. Personal in the sense, of course, you know, worshiping Lord Vishnu and Narayan is not impersonal. And we see how Ajamil perfected his life by chanting the name of Narayan, even though that was his son's name. Right? He got the benefit. But if you look at the Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, Haridasa Thakur describes how the names of Krishna describe the original, the Adi Purusham, right? The original personality of God. And also Hare Krishna is Krishna and his internal potency, his internal personal expansion of his internal spiritual energy. The personification of which is Srimati Radharani. So when we're chanting these names of God that are immediately personal and referring to him in his original form, they have the greatest potency to describe, right? So there's benefits, but the benefit that accrues to one who chants these very personal names, and that's why we give it the Maha Mantra, and that's why it's called the Maha Mantra, right? Because it has the biggest, the greatest effect when chanted, you know, without personal motivation, purely with a desire to satisfy Krishna, with a desire to surrender. Then that has the greatest potency. Yet, so you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that we should encourage people in acts of devotion, right? Don't disturb the minds of the those who don't have a full understanding of the potency of chanting Hare Krishna, and say they're fixed in a particular cultural setting. Right? And so chanting Hare Krishna may be too foreign for them. Right? We don't disturb them. We encourage them, and gradually they'll come to the point of understanding. So in that context, we encourage people to chant.
And gradually they could work up to the
point. Yes, to a more personal realization of what Krishna means.
But it's a good start to be chanting any of the names.
Any name of God is potent. And so that's why Prabhupada would do that. Yeah, you know, if somebody was open to the idea, Prabhupada would say, chant Hare Krishna. Huh? Even Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar Devotion how people imitate the devotees by shaving their heads. Huh? And even imitate them by chanting Hare Krishna. Which is we do, you know. Still, there's benefit. Imitation of a good thing is good.
Yeah.
Anything else?
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
May I ask about motive? Because we live in a material world, so we cannot stop acting. And when we act, there is always a reaction. And the reaction can be a material kind and spiritual kind. And what comes if, Maharaj Bali refused the full instructions of his spiritual master not to give Lord Vamana three steps of land, he broke the rule. He didn't follow the instructions of his spiritual master. But his motive was pure. So it doesn't mean that if we need to consider our motive of action as the main reason how to act.
Yes. And that's why it's very interesting, you know, the process of bhakti does deal very much with the internal, purity, and purity of motivation. And so, Bali Maharaj was punished for his disobedience, but rewarded for his motive. Right. And so the Lord was pleased, even though his guru was displeased, which underlines the fact that his guru was actually not behaving properly. He wasn't really a guru at that point. And so one can reject a guru if they're not teaching properly. That's what that teaches us. That just simply blind following is a measure of a person's, not necessarily a measure of a person's sincerity, although it could be, but also it can be a measure of a person's stupidity. Right? If the guru is off, he's no longer the guru. Can happen, does happen, has happened, as we see in our shastra. So, but Krishna, Ramanadev, Upendra, understood the sincerity of Bali. And then Bali Maharaj was fully surrendered to him, despite the risks that would come from disobeying his guru. Right? And so, and despite the fact that he knew that everything would be taken away from him, he knew everything would be taken. But he didn't mind, because he also understood that it didn't belong to him, it wasn't his. So, yes, Krishna does see the motivation, and the devotees do see the motivation. And Krishna also sometimes overlooks the material motivation of the devotee, because the devotee has sincerely served him and glorified him. Right? We see that interestingly in the case of Daksha, who got the darshan of Lord Vishnu, yet his motivation for worshipping Lord Vishnu was to become a progenitor. And also interestingly, Lord Brahma pleased Krishna, yet his motivation was to pursue, you know, to create material creation. He wanted to do it on Krishna's behalf, but still that was a material activity, as recognized by Krishna himself.
But motivation was to do it as Krishna said?
As Krishna said, that's right, yes. So he said, I appreciate what you want to do. Here's how you need to act to perfect the performance of your material activities by marrying them or by connecting them with Krishna. And so that's what we do. Right? And why we study the Shastra is so that we can learn what is the correct motivation, even if my desire is to do things exercising my natural proclivities, which are basically determined by our material setting. Right? How do we purify that? We purify that by the process of sadhana, the process of bhakti, by understanding our relationships and then understanding the process. So this sambandha, knowing who we are, and then abhidaya, you know who you are, now act. And you know, a lot of what we do is, a lot of our motivation, devotees' motivation is, you know, who am I? A lot of people's motivation, people are very confused in this day and age, right? Even we get confused. Maya, we get it, we say, oh, I'm in Maya. Basically confused, right? Everything is clear as mud. And so we're recommended then to follow the surrendering process, because that re-establishes our identity. You know, Prabhupada explains that, you know, sometimes we'll just be in a state of bewilderment. Just like if you see the fish pond and you get a stick. Right. You put the stick in the fish pond and just stir it around the bottom and everything, then all the dirt, everything comes up. You can't see anything. It's all just cloudy water. And Prabhupada says then, what you need to do if you're in that situation, in that setting, chant Hare Krishna. And the chanting of Hare Krishna is like the settling of the water until it becomes clear. And then through the chanting of Hare Krishna, everything becomes clear again. Huh? And then we remember, here I'm Krishna's servant. I serve Krishna by serving my Guru Maharaj, by serving Srila Prabhupada. You know, ultimately Prabhupada is our he's our family acharya, we call him. And so we follow Prabhupada's instructions. Our guru says, follow Prabhupada's instructions. And what does Prabhupada say? Become a member of ISKCON. Preach. No? Then we remember, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Huh? And then when we do that, then, you know, all of the clarity of purpose, the clarity of identification becomes manifest. And then we're happy, you know, we're, that's it. How come I forgot that? Huh? How come I forgot that? So, Krishna does reciprocate with the devotee if he follows the process, even if there is some material motivation. Right? That's a given. It's kind of a given. You're in the material world? Well, how did you get here? Because of material desires, obviously, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't be here if we had just pure spiritual desire, we wouldn't be here. Or we'd be at the platform of somebody like Srila Prabhupada. Right? So we're not obviously at that point. So, you know, Bali Maharaj did have material desires. Otherwise, how did he become, how did he conquer the demigods? Right? But inherently was that devotee. Right? Inherently, in Bali Maharaj was a devotee, even though he's a demon. Right? Bali Maharaj is a demon, the grandson of another famous demon. Who? Prahlad Maharaj.
His grandson. His grandson of Prahlad Maharaj.
I think so. Isn't that right? Or is he over there? Bali Maharaj is a grandson of Prahlad?
Yes. But his son and his father is really...
Yeah, anyway. Demons can be devotees. But they're demons because there must be some material consideration. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj is rather exceptional. So, extraordinarily exceptional. But we don't fit into that category. So there may be some material motivation in the heart of a devotee. And so therefore the sadhana process, the chanting Hare Krishna, the study of book, you know, study of the Bhakti Shastra, is what purifies that. So even though Lord Brahma did have an inclination, let's say a material inclination, Krishna instructed him, here's how you purify and perfect those activities. And we have that, you know. You're in your setting, you have your duties to perform. Right? Material, so-called material duties. But I have my the setting that I was born into, and my propensity to act, and my duties to perform. And Krishna emphasizes that a lot in the Bhagavad Gita, just do your duty, right? But he also clarifies that by saying, you know, we sacrifice our material tendencies by dovetailing them or engaging them in spiritual activities or spiritual purpose, and that's where that measure of sincerity, that measure of practice, that motivation, as you mentioned, is measured by Krishna and is seen by Krishna, and it was seen by Bali. Krishna saw that, or Vamanadeva saw that in Bali Maharaj and rewarded him accordingly. A lesson for us, he took away everything, all of his material, he took away everything He took away everything. So Krishna will take away everything. But this, when we chant Hare Krishna, we are praying to Krishna to take away everything from me. Or don't be surprised if he does. But the interesting thing is he'll give it all back again when we're able to use it in his service, in that pure environment, purified environment. So, yeah, motivation is everything. But it's purified by chanting Hare Krishna purely, and we chant Hare Krishna purely by study of the Shastra. And association with the devotees. That's how we learn to chant. You're a bit late for class, gentlemen. Okay, I think we should finish here. We're getting rounded up by these fellows.
By the cowboy boys.
What's that?
By the cowboy boys.
Yeah, the cowboy boys. Just because they're small doesn't mean they're necessarily cowboy boys. They could be gopis.
Yeah.
Eh? Or you could be the gopi recognizing the cowherd boys. We don't know. Okay, congratulations on Bhagavad Gita. Jai. Jai. Jai.
Jai.
Jai.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.
Oops.